time for the best coverage of the top stories in sports. The Sports Wrap with Jason Page starts now.
And it's good to be with you on this Wednesday edition of the show, a largely NFL draft preview program for you today. We'll be joined by Ross Tucker of the Ross Tucker Football Podcast. Does a great job on the Westwood One NFL analysis as well. Bill Bender stops by, gives us the college perspective on the draft as well. But we start things out in the NBA, and we bring in our friend Sam Yarnell, who will be with us throughout the show today. And boy, Sam, a couple of series get to 1-1. Finally, a couple of road teams are able to win some games. Start with the Pacers. And look, I mean, you know, without Giannis Antetokounmpo, we thought the Pacers had a great shot to win this series. And last night you found out why. Here's what's interesting about this series. If you look at all the playoff series so far, only one has bucked the trend of lower scoring games. And it's this series. Every other series has been ultra low scoring. Back to, you know, throwback mid-90s, late-90s NBA basketball. And this series is still the one where nobody's playing defense, so it really doesn't matter how physical the series gets. But you look, I'm not shocked the Pacers got the split in Milwaukee. I still like them to win this series, especially with no Giannis as of right now. We're still not sure when he's coming back. The Pacers are a tough team.
They are. Jason Pascal looked great in this one. It was really good to see the Pacers kind of get back on track against a good team. But the Bucks in this game, Jason, they reminded me of the old Portland Trailblazers, like the very end of the Dame era Portland Trailblazers, because you had Dame go out there and almost drop 40 points and the team still lost by damn near 20. It was wild to see this in the Eastern Conference, because I feel like we're so used to seeing it happen in the Western Conference across multiple teams. That said, if the Bucks don't get Giannis back, if this ankle, calf, whatever it may be, maybe Achilles thing, really stays bugging him, the Pacers are going to win every game remaining in this series, and they showed you exactly why last night. They can distribute the scoring, and that offense we've seen all season has the firepower to outscore just about anyone in the NBA.
Yeah, and the Bucks didn't get a ton from their bench last night either, which certainly played a factor in this game. You know, Lopez didn't play bad. You need a big series. And you know, when I talked about this last week with Kurt Heelan in our NBA preview, he said it. You know, they were going to need a huge series from Chris Middleton. They're not getting a huge series so far from Chris Middleton, and that's who they're going to need to step up. And he hasn't been that Chris Middleton really for a couple of years, so that obviously has a huge impact on this series. The other one, you want to throw in something? Go ahead.
I just wanted to say that to your point about the bench thing, that's kind of what I mean by the old Trailblazers teams. You remember when they would make the first round of the playoffs and it would be Dame, CJ, and Yusuf Nurkic, but then when you get onto the bench, they have absolutely no one. One thing I will say on the side of the Pacers, it's still a little concerning to me that Tyrese Halliburton was 4-for-10 and only had 12 points last night. I mean, I don't know how that guy fell off the cliff that he did, but if the Pacers want to make it past anyone besides the Bucks without Giannis, they're going to need Tyrese to start scoring.
Yeah, they are. He had 12 last night, only 10 shots. Too, which is kind of bizarre. But maybe it's a question of, you know, the Bucks saying we're going to take away Halliburton, somebody else is going to have to beat us, and in that case you get Siakam, who's jacking up 23 shots last night. Go look at the shot distribution in that game last night. Siakam 23 shots, Miles Turner 15 shots, Nembhard had 11 shots, Nesmith 10 shots. Halliburton's tied for the least shots of anybody in that starting lineup with 10 shots. Move over to the Mavericks, who get a game to win on the road, a physical game last night in Los Angeles against the Clippers. It wasn't pretty, but if you're the Mavericks, you'll take the split on the road in Los Angeles. And what was a really exciting game, Doncic and Kyrie doing what they do in this game. Not a surprise this thing goes back to Dallas split. I think it's a long series.
I do too. And this was impressive for me because what you saw was the Dallas Mavericks win a game without Luka playing at his best. He went under, I believe, every prop that was hung for him. He may have gone over the points by the hook, but this is a Luka performance that wasn't even what Vegas was expecting, which I guess we could see deem just above average for him. All that said, impressive for the Mavs. They get a big win without the best performance from a team that we talk so much about relies on him way too heavily.
Doncic finished with 32, Irving with 23. PJ Washington was big in that game as well. Hit a couple of big shots. By the way, boy, the Phoenix Suns look terrible. And Kevin Durant didn't look very good last night. They get thumped in Minnesota, 105-93. So Minnesota's up 2-0 in that series. I predicted Minnesota would win that series, and it's looking like that's going to be the case. The only one I'm really wrong on right now is Cleveland and Orlando, which goes back to Orlando with the Cavs up 2-0 in that series. Last but not least, the NBA releasing its last two-minute report on the Sixers-Knicks finish on Monday night. And lo and behold, we have mistakes. The league admitting that Tyrese Maxey, yes, indeed, did get fouled. In fact, three of the four blown calls in that final two-minute report went against the 76ers. I think every game of the series, I said it, I picked the Knicks, I think, in five, but I think every game's going to be ultra close, and you found that out. And if you want something to kind of hang your head on right now, if you're the Sixers, it's the fact that you had every opportunity to win both of these games, but you can't be happy about the officiating.
Listen, I've never been to Madison Square Garden. Honestly, I've never been inside. But it feels like that barn has just a little bit of power over officials sometimes. I think the last 2 minutes in that Knicks Sixers game were probably an example of that.
Mask Larry Johnson, the famous four point play that shouldn't have even been a foul. There is always a little magic in that garden, as we saw. By the way, and not to be forgotten, because we don't have any time to get to hockey today. Rangers win last night. They had to withstand a furious onslaught late from the Caps to get a win. And somebody told you to take the over when it comes to the Winnipeg-Colorado game in two last night. It finished at 7-3.
By the hook, baby.
It's a winner, winner, chicken dinner if you listen to yours truly. That game was 3-2 with like 10 minutes to go in the second period. I'm like, it's a wrap. Woke up this morning, saw it finished 4-3. All right, let's do our NFL draft preview. Happy to do it. Our friend Bill Bender, that's who. He's going to stop by. We're going to get into it with him from the collegiate standpoint on this draft. Then Ross Tucker will join us in a bit. We'll get into it with him as well. Don't go anywhere. We got a lot to do.
Over 13 million Americans were affected by identity theft in 2022, and the threats go way beyond just credit card fraud. Today's identity thieves can use your information in ways that are easy to miss by just monitoring accounts and credit, like opening loans, transferring home titles, even committing crimes.
Someone got my Social Security number, made a driver's license, and was used for criminal activity.
You can do so much with a Social Security number that I didn't know could happen. They drained my bank account. It was terrifying.
You're even more vulnerable than you realize. Your information is exposed through online shopping, banking, even corporate data breaches. No wonder there's a new victim of identity theft every 3 seconds. Only LifeLock alerts you to the widest volume of threats all in one place. Like someone trying to use your Social Security number, open a new loan in your name, or even commit a crime in your name.
There was a big yes button and there was a big no button. I clicked, that's not me, and LifeLock took it from there.
If you become a victim of identity theft, a dedicated U.S.-based restoration specialist will be assigned to your case and work to fix the issue on your behalf.
If something happens, you have somebody fighting for you.
All LifeLock members are backed by the LifeLock $1 Million Protection Package, including reimbursement for stolen funds, personal expenses, and coverage for lawyers and experts up to $1 million. It can be dangerously easy to steal your identity. With LifeLock, it's easy to help protect yourself.
I will be with LifeLock forever.
Join the millions of people already protected by LifeLock. And for a limited time, save 25% on your first year with promo code 25TV. All plans include a 60-day money-back guarantee. Call 800-710-7531 or visit LifeLock.com/25TV to save 25% on your first year of identity theft protection. Enroll now.
Attention families with a loved one in a nursing home. If your loved one has suffered from bed sores, falls, broken bones, dehydration, or even death, you may be entitled to a substantial settlement. If you have a loved one who was injured in a nursing home, we will find out what happened. State violations are found against nursing homes every day. You have a limited time to file your claim, so don't wait. Call 800-398-5999 and speak with one of our attorneys. The call is confidential and free.
Sports Wrap continues. Good to have you with us on this Wednesday edition of the show. We keep the conversation moving as it relates to the NFL draft. Our friend Ross Tucker drops by the show. He is the host of the one and only Ross Tucker Football Podcast. Talk to him about that. A whole bunch of other stuff, too. All right, Ross. Is there anything that tells you, and I got it, it's the prereq, I have to ask this question. Is there anything, because they're trying to give us drama when it comes to, you know, this number one pick, the Bears, oh, you just got to watch and see. There isn't anything that tells us they'd do anything other than Caleb Williams here, right?
No, the Bears are drafting Caleb Williams, number one overall. I'd be stunned if the Commanders didn't draft Jaden Daniels, number two. You know, it's kind of feeling more and more, Jason, like the draft's going to start with the New England Patriots at number three.
All right, and where do you think they go? Where do you think they should go?
Well, that's really interesting because, you know, it really depends, obviously, on their evaluation and their conviction of the quarterbacks. And so, do they love Drake May? Do they love J.J. McCarthy? If they love either one of them, take them. Easy peasy, no problem. If you don't love either one of them, I don't think you take one just to take one, right? I mean, you got to really love the guy and think he's the guy. Because if you don't, I think that the Vikings would likely move up for Drake May, or a team like the Broncos might move up for J.J. McCarthy. And so if you don't love him, if you're not convinced of the guy for 10 years, trade down with one of these other teams, get a king's ransom, and get some really good players. Their roster's not very good. So get some really good players to get the roster better and get your quarterback at some other point and have Jacoby Brissett, you know, take the reins for this year.
So he takes a beating this year, and then you go into the draft next year, and you're looking at who in that case?
Well, so there's going to be some good quarterbacks next year, yeah, right? I mean, Quinn Ewers from Texas, Shador Sanders from Colorado, and then there will be other guys that step up. There always are, right? Maybe it's Drew Aller from Penn State. He's got a heck of an arm. You know, there will be other quarterbacks. Mark my words, there will be more than two first-round quarterbacks next year, and we'll be talking about them for months and months. It happens every year. It's very rare to have a EJ Manuel year or a Kenny Pickett year, if you will. And I don't think that's going to be the case next year.
I had former NFL safety Nick Ferguson on the show yesterday. He's a friend of the program. And we were talking about what the Broncos do at 12. And they're in an interesting spot because they go and get Zach Wilson. I mean, that quarterback situation is a train wreck. You obviously had the Russell Wilson dysfunction over the last 2 years. Where do you go if you're Denver at that spot, knowing you don't have a second round pick as of right now? I mean, it feels like everything is in disarray with that organization.
Well, I actually wrote about it, you know, this week for my column for the 33rd team. They're a disaster right now. They have one of the worst rosters in the NFL, and you never want to be in a position where you're telegraphing what you need to do. And that's where they are with quarterback. I don't believe for a second that they're going to go into the 2024 season and try to sell their fan base on Jarrett Stidham and Zach Wilson. I just don't.
That's what I said yesterday. That's what I said yesterday. I said, how is that fan base going through what it has at quarterback since Peyton Manning left, feeling the exhilaration of, oh, Russell Wilson's going to fix it, and then having that go south? There's no way they could go into this season with those three quarterbacks they have right now.
Correct. You're not going to sell any tickets. You came out with the uniforms. They didn't look great, to be honest with you. You're not going to help yourself there. And you can't go into a season, especially when you've had a successful franchise for a while, with mediocre being the ceiling. If everything goes well, we'll be mediocre. I mean, it's still a professional entertainment industry. Makes it really, really tough to do. I think what they'll do is, I don't think they're going to trade up because they don't have enough. I think they're going to hope that Bo Nix falls to them and they take him at 12, or they trade back and get Bo Nix later. Because I really haven't seen his name attached to any other team other than the Broncos.
Has anybody wowed you from the end of the college football season? It's tough to be wild with guys, you know, running around in shorts and t-shirts without pads on, making throws. But whose stock in your mind has risen the most from the end of the season to where we are now?
Oh, Jaden Daniels. I mean, Jay, I had so many guys come on my show over the last couple months, the Ross Tucker Football Podcast, Greg Cosell, Chase Daniel, Phil Sims, Dan Orlovsky, Lewis Riddick. I mean, it's like a consensus, man. Here's the two things that were a consensus from those guys. They all love Jaden Daniels. And not even the running part, which is ridiculous. They're talking about him as a pure pocket passer, him as a progression reader, all big fans of his. And also, they all had major concerns about Drake May. I mean, that was the consensus, right? Like, I think the terms I remember about Drake May were raw, bad footwork, disappointing, misses the layups.
Wow.
Lacks throw-to-throw accuracy. I mean, when every guy I have come on my show, Jason, says the same thing about those two guys, I'm just going to believe him. Otherwise, why am I even bringing him on the show? I mean, if it's like unanimous from the six, what am I going to be like, no, I think Drake May is good. And Daniel's like, well, then why do I have all these guys come on my show? But I think that they're clowning. They don't know what they're talking about.
Does it? But can sometimes, just to push back on that a little, is it possible sometimes that a narrative gets formed and everybody just jumps on that train?
Yes, but not with those guys.
Yeah.
I mean, I think the narrative gets out there and a lot of people jump on it. But those are guys I know watch multiple games of each prospect and evaluate the quarterback position before coming to a conclusion. And a lot of these guys said it before it became a narrative.
Right. Ross Tucker is hanging out with us. We're going to get into it with him on some individual teams. Sam Yarnell will join the conversation. He's got a question about the Bills that he wants to ask, because it wouldn't be a football conversation if we didn't talk about the Bills. Ross Tucker is host of the Ross Tucker Football Podcast. We'll also ask him about MyFrontPageStory.com. With Mother's Day right around the corner, you're going to want to hear about it. Stick around. We got a lot more to do. Sports Wrap continues on this Wednesday, our NFL Draft Preview Show. Don't go anywhere. Only Sports Wrap continues on this Wednesday. Our NFL draft preview continues. The great Ross Tucker, thankful to be joined by him. Sam Yarnell jumps in for this segment as well. Ross, of course, host of the Ross Tucker Football Podcast. You could also check out MyFrontPageStory.com. Mother's Day is right around the corner. What a great gift to give her. Ross, tell me about MyFrontPageStory.com.
Well, no, I mean, honestly, Jason, nobody knows what to get their mom. Check this thing out. It's unbelievable. I mean, think about this for a second, right? I texted my wife to ask what I should get my mom for Mother's Day. I texted my mom, what should I? I mean, nobody knows. It looks like it's on the cover of the newspaper. It's framed. It's beautiful. You talk to a writer for 10 minutes, tell them how great your mom is. They write this incredible story. And I can just tell you this right now. If your mom doesn't cry, I'll be shocked. And we're talking NFL draft. Like, everybody's mom. Nobody has a mom that's a bust. If you do that, that's horrible. And that's another conversation. Everybody's mom is a number one draft pick. Get them the pick they deserve. MyFrontPageStory.com.
Hey, before I let Sam get his question in on the Bills, what are the Giants going to do? I'm a Giants fan, so if we're going to be self-serving here, I'll ask you, what are the Giants doing? Because obviously there doesn't feel like there's a lot of confidence in Daniel Jones when it comes to this team with all that we've heard around in this offseason. What are the Giants going to do?
I think they're going to take a wide receiver.
They have to.
Yeah. I think they need a receiver. Whether Daniel Jones a quarterback or somebody else or somebody next year, they need a receiver. I can't remember the last time the Giants had a difference-making player at that position. Probably, what, Odell?
Yeah.
You know, early in the Odell years. And there's so many good ones. And with all these teams wanting quarterbacks, it sounds like they'll get their choice. Worst case scenario, they're getting one of the big three, right? Malik Nabers, Marvin Harrison Jr., Rome Odunze, and everybody you talk to loves all three of these guys. I think that the Giants are taking a receiver. I think they should take a receiver.
All right, Sam, you are a resident Bills fan, so you've got something for Ross.
Ross, I'm going to pull at your heartstrings a little bit. Let me paint a picture for you, because I know that everyone in the national and, quite frankly, the local media covering the Bills, they're all so caught up in the Bills needing a wide receiver and taking a wide receiver in the first round. People are forgetting how great the offensive line is in this draft. We've got a total offensive lineman drafted in the first round set at 9.5 at most sports books right now. I want to know when the last time that number was that high. That's one in roughly every three picks being an offensive lineman. It's stacked top to bottom. And the Bills are going to have a big hole. They need Connor McGovern to shift to center this year. Obviously, Mitch Morse down in Miami now with the Bills of the South down there. I'm curious if you think that there's any remote chance that the Bills reach for one of these really good offensive linemen that we're seeing come out of college in the first round and wait until later rounds to go for a wide receiver that they can stack in their wide receiver room and maybe try to make a trade for a wide receiver one. Do you think that's a possibility?
I think it's a possibility. I think it's unlikely. I think it's unlikely because right now their floor at offensive guard, which is the concern position, or their floor at the interior offensive line, is David Edwards, who I think is solid. Lyle Collins could probably even take some snaps for them at guard if they needed it. And so I think what they'll do is they got a lot of picks. I mean, they got a lot of picks in the later rounds, a couple fourth rounders, a bunch of fifth rounders. I think it's more likely that they're, you know, for offensive line, okay, it doesn't really, this will sound weird, but it's way more important that you're not bad, that you're not really bad, than it is that you're really good. Does that make sense?
Like, yeah, sure.
I, you know, I could, you know, from when I was there, I wasn't a really good player, but we won more of the games that I started than we lost, right? Like, I wasn't the reason why we were losing games. You just need a guy that's not going to be the reason why you lose. I think they have it already in Edwards and Lyle Collins. So what they'll do is they'll draft the guy in the second round or third round or fourth round, maybe a couple of them, and try to see if they hit on one of them and have them beat out these guys. But at receiver, you can't have average. Like, you need a guy that's a difference-making player. They cannot roll with the guys they have right now. And because of the fact, I think they're pick 60 is a little bit late at receiver. I think pick 60, they can still get a very good interior offensive lineman. I think pick 60 is a little bit late at receiver. I think at 28, though, there are going to be a lot of good receivers. A.D. Mitchell, Ricky Pearsall, maybe Brian Thomas falls there. I mean, maybe it's Ladd McConkey, and they just get somebody for Josh that's open every play, no matter what, somehow. There's a bunch of options that they can get at 28. of a guy that will start at wide receiver for them right away and probably be productive. So I think it's unlikely.
Let me get you out on this one. To go back to the quarterbacks here for a second, because this obviously is a huge quarterback draft. JJ McCarthy, where do you sort of sit with him? Because depending on who you talk to, there are a lot of, you know, I remember talking to people 2 years ago, you know, a year and a half ago, that thought he was the best of this crop of quarterbacks potentially as an NFL quarterback. Where do you sit on McCarthy right now?
I like him. I like him quite a bit. You know, I know there's a lot of people that are very anti, you know, quarterback wins and all that stuff. I am not. That's the goal, right? I mean, that's what we're trying to accomplish. And if you've won as much as he's won, that means at a minimum, you haven't screwed it up. And it also means you've made winning plays late in games where you've had to make winning plays. You know, I think it's so crazy to me that we, you know, quarterback wins aren't a stat, but they are for head coaches. Who do you think has more to do with a win or a loss in the NFL, the head coach or the quarterback? I can guarantee you it's the quarterback. Look, that's why quarterbacks get paid twice as much money, even though there's no salary cap for coaches, because quarterbacks are more important. So I think winning matters, and I think the fact that McCarthy has won that much really, because he's still a young player, you know, true junior, yeah. And he's got more physical ability, I think, than he gets credit for. He's a highly rated recruit. Got an offer in eighth grade from Iowa State. He's got the physical ability. Maybe he's not quite as jaw-dropping as some of these other guys, but he's got more than enough in the tank.
Ross Tucker, host of the Ross Tucker Football Podcast. Also, don't forget myfrontpagestory.com with Mother's Day right around the corner. Ross, I always appreciate it, my friend. I know it's a busy time for you with the draft right around the corner, and always grateful for your time. Thank you, sir.
Yeah, my pleasure. Thanks for having me, Jason. Keep up the great work.
More sports wrap right around the corner. Don't go anywhere.
Attention families with a loved one in a nursing home. If your loved one has suffered from bed sores, falls, broken bones, dehydration, or even death, you may be entitled to a substantial settlement. If you have a loved one who was injured in a nursing home, we will find out what happened. State violations are found against nursing homes every day. You have a limited time to file your claim, so don't wait. Call 800-398-5999 and speak with one of our attorneys. The call is confidential and free.
Good to be with you on this Wednesday edition of the show. Let's talk some more about the NFL draft. From the collegiate perspective, nobody better to talk to than this guy. The Bill Bender does a terrific job, all things college football. The Sporting News is his jam. Hangs out with us, and again, always appreciative of all these guys that come on, because this is, you know, outside of the Super Bowl and obviously during the NFL season, this is a busy time for a lot of these guys with the NFL draft being here. Well, we start at the top, Bill, and I mean, we're talking about Caleb Williams obviously being the top overall pick in this draft, barring something incredibly unforeseen, with the Chicago Bears. Everything you hear is love him. You know, you heard Ryan Poles talk about, you know, what some of the players have said that have met with him. Is there any reason to believe, or what would give you pause about Caleb Williams? You've seen more of him than just about anybody watching college football as much as you do.
Incredible talent, you know, coming from USC, he's going to be compared to Patrick Mahomes. I'm not there on that. I think there's only one Patrick Mahomes. He's incredible off script. He runs a little bit like a running back, and he has a cannon for an arm. Now, do you want to get into the other things, like the comparison to Prince, which I thought was bizarre? I mean, I keep telling myself that 18 to 22-year-olds are a lot different than they were when I was a kid. I put it that way. So if he has a phone that's pink, I don't care. If he has, but in an NFL locker room, he's going to earn respect by being a leader and winning football games. And at a quarterback starved place like Chicago, if he goes 10-6 at any point in the next 2 years and gets them to the playoffs, he'll be the biggest celebrity in the city.
Yeah, that goes without saying. But there's a history here, and you've written about this, you know, when it comes to quarterbacks at USC. So there are going to be some people, obviously, who, and look, I don't believe, I mean, Is there something to it, or is it just simply happenstance or circumstance that leads us to a conclusion that says, well, he's out of USC. This ain't going to end well.
Well, I'm telling you, look at the last five first-round picks, and it's a variety, right? You could start off the top and say he's the next Todd Marinovich. Well, I wouldn't go that far. You know, guys like Carson Palmer, who, depending on who you ask, and remember, I live in Ohio, I mean, he threw for 40,000 yards in the NFL. So he did have a successful NFL career. Mark Sanchez was actually pretty good in the playoffs for an abbreviated career. And then you look at Matt Leinart and Sam Darnold and mixed reviews there. But I think you just said it. I think some of that's circumstance more than anything. You know, those guys all went to really poor NFL franchises. And Palmer, on some level, turned the Bengals around. So that's the challenge for Caleb Williams. It's twofold. You can say, well, USC quarterbacks are terrible in the pros, but look at where most of them landed.
If I remember correctly, and I don't remember if it was you, and if it wasn't you, I apologize, and you can tell me I'm completely wrong. Not after this past college football season, but the one before that, I remember having you on. Was it you that said that you thought McCarthy could actually wind up being the best of that group of quarterbacks, if I'm not mistaken? You were pretty high on him, and I wouldn't imagine there's anything that would dissuade you from that standpoint if that was you that I remember saying that.
I think I told you that I thought J.J. McCarthy will be better in the NFL than he was in college.
Okay.
I do remember. I've told that to just about everybody, and I am very, and I'm sure I did say I was very high on him. I love the record. I love that at Michigan, where the pressure to make plays in a small sample, he made those plays. You look at his third down numbers, his fourth down numbers, the intangibles. Remember at Big Ten Media Day when everybody lost their mind that Jim Harbaugh compared him to Patrick Mahomes and Josh Allen? Wasn't talking about the toolbox. He was talking about the leadership. And I think J.J. McCarthy's got a little bit of that it factor to him. I think he's going to be really good at the next level.
Does the landing spot matter, though? I mean, you know as well as I do, you know, not everybody's born on third base. Sometimes you if you just land in the wrong spot, I mean, who knows? Maybe Zach Wilson is better if he had landed somewhere else where he could have been developed and wasn't under the spotlight of New York and wasn't, you know, stupping, you know, other people's mothers. Whatever you want to say, I mean, maybe the spot that he lands in winds up dictating just what he winds up being.
Well, I mean, Daniel Jeremiah talked about that on his conference call last week, and he said if you ask any of these quarterbacks the best landing spot, it's Minnesota. Well, why? You get to throw to Justin Jefferson. You're on a team that is in playoff contention. The organization isn't – I wouldn't classify Minnesota as a mess by any stretch. No. That's a solid organization in the NFL.
Absolutely.
So I think if McCarthy landed there and sat behind Sam Darnold, that USC quarterback, by the way, for a couple year or even a couple games, he might be set up for success there. Same for Drake May. If Minnesota makes an aggressive play to get Drake May, he's the one out of this group I like the most, by the way.
Really?
All ball, all the time, elevated North Carolina. People are picking apart how he played against
NC State. I just had Ross Tucker on the show who said literally everybody that he's talked to is just crushing Drake May. So that's why I'm like,
Well, I mean, for what? Like, that would be my response, is he's an all-ball guy that elevated North Carolina. I think you're getting a lot more than Sam Howell there. And I liked Sam Howell, but again, landing spot wasn't great. You know, you look at what he did in that offense. He's got the physical tools. He runs the football. I'm a little biased because we did a feature on him a year ago, and he was awesome, you know, to talk to. So we'll see. Maybe he's got me duped, but I do think Drake May is going to have a really good NFL career.
Bill Bender is hanging out with us. He does a terrific job with the sporting news on college football. He will join us for one more segment. Sam Yarnell will jump into the conversation. We'll get some thoughts as we continue to move through our NFL Draft Preview 2024. Good to have you all with us on this Wednesday edition of Sports Wrap. Don't go anywhere. We got a lot more to do.
Over 13 million Americans were affected by identity theft in 2022. And the threats go way beyond just credit card fraud. Today's identity thieves can open loans, transfer home titles, and even commit crimes in your name.
Someone got my Social Security number, made a driver's license, and was used for criminal activity.
Your information is exposed through online shopping, banking,
even corporate data breaches. No wonder there's a new victim of identity theft every 3 seconds. Only LifeLock alerts you to the widest volume of threats all in one place.
I clicked, "That's not me," and LifeLock took it from there.
If you become a victim, a dedicated U.S.-based restoration specialist will work to fix the issue. All LifeLock members are backed by the LifeLock $1 Million Protection Package, including reimbursement for stolen funds.
I will be with LifeLock forever.
Enrollment takes just minutes. Call now or go online and use promo code GET25 to save 25% on your first year. Enroll now.
All right, odds and ends right around the corner in about 10 minutes. We'll finish the show with some baseball. We bookended it. Did some NBA on the front, some baseball on the back, all the NFL draft stuff in the middle. It's like a sandwich, something like that. Food, making me hungry. All right, let's continue the conversation on the NFL draft. Our friend Bill Bender is with us from the Sporting News. Sammy Arnell joins the conversation as well. Sam, you got a thought on wide receivers?
Bill, I wanted to get your take because, you know, and we talked with Ross about how deep this draft is, but it truly is at the wide receiver position, and there's been so much attention since before the college football season started around Marvin Harrison Jr., and then obviously Roma Dunze, Malik Nabers coming into the fold as well. But when you get down the draft list to your Roman Wilsons, to your A.D. Mitchells, to your Xavier Legettes and Xavier Worthies, to your Troy Franklins, where do you think that the biggest sleeper may be, or where do you think that there's potentially a wide receiver that's not getting due credit or due respect in all these mocks that we're seeing coming out leading up to draft day on Thursday?
Yeah, I think if you look at Roman Wilson, he could be that sleeper. He didn't have a lot of opportunities at Michigan, but he was awesome in the Shrine Bowl. He played very well and can get down the field. So by all accounts, he had a really good week. Ladd McConkey's probably a second, third round guy that will fit in the NFL, in today's NFL. If you like a good slot receiver, all around talent, made plays at Georgia whenever he could. And I think he's an interesting story. Now at the top, you know, I still think it's Marvin Harrison, but I won't be surprised if Malik Nabers goes ahead of him based on that 40 time, the ability to play slot and wide, and he worked out. Marvin Harrison left that door open by not working out, which is interesting.
Yeah, and that kind of surprised me in the case of Harrison, the decision not to work out. Bit of arrogance? I mean, what do you attribute it to ultimately?
Well, that is a little bit because guys are doing things differently. Obviously, Ja'Marr Chase didn't play a whole season, didn't hurt him. Micah Parsons didn't play a whole season. Now, granted, that was during COVID. Marvin Harrison is a special talent. I've seen him do nothing but make plays the last 2 years at Ohio State. But, you know, with that Biletnikoff award between Rome, Malik, Marvin, this was probably the best year for that award in a long time. All three of those guys are going to be franchise receivers, wide receiver ones. There's no wrong answer, but in terms of, you know, who goes first, receivers are arrogant. You know that. All three of those guys want to be the first one.
Bill, I wanted to ask you about the Washington wide receivers specifically. Obviously, Roma Dunze, we've talked a ton about him throughout the course of the buildup to the draft, but Jalen Polk and Jalen McMillan are two interesting names to me in this draft. Do you see them at all being, you know, first or second day picks or even third day picks, or are these guys who are going to have to want to try and make a team deeper in the draft?
Well, Jalen McMillan will probably go in the second round. He's got a very good chance of doing that. Polk also part of that group. It's tough to evaluate sometimes because of the way Washington spread the football out to those three guys. All of them are good, and all of them should be able to contribute in the NFL. I really like McMillan, the route running, being able to separate. Fit could fit well in what Washington's going to want to do with the new offensive coordinator and a new quarterback probably. So, I mean, he could be one of those guys that steps in and plays right away.
Hey, let me get one in real quick before we get you out of here, and that is on the Reggie Bush Heisman situation. 14 years later, he winds up getting the Heisman returned to him. What did you make of the way this whole thing played out?
We didn't need to have this happen in the first place. You know, I always considered him the winner on the field, which the great irony is some of us still think Vince Young could have won the Heisman that year. And it played out on the field a little bit when they played that classic game. I would just urge anybody who thinks Reggie Bush shouldn't have won the Heisman that year, go pop in the Fresno State game. Over 500 all-purpose yards, some of the most magnificent runs you'll ever see, one of the most entertaining players I've ever seen. And as a Heisman voter, I'm really happy that he's getting that back. It takes that like little asterisk out when you're writing the content about the Heisman. Reggie Bush was great. I'm glad he has it. And it shows the signs of, you know, changing times in college football with how we look at some of the things we used to look at.
Real quick, it's never too early to look ahead. We were talking about Ross Tucker. When it comes to quarterbacks in next year's draft, if somebody like the Patriots say, you know what, we're not confident in where we're going with quarterback at the top of this draft, we're going to hold off, we'll play Jacoby Brissett. Who's the quarterback next year that you look forward to seeing in the NFL? And if you were saying right now is going to be the top quarterback pick next year?
Shedeur Sanders. We're going to talk about Shedeur Sanders a lot in the next year, Jason. They have 365 days of it. Arch Manning, because Arch Manning tore up that spring game. And if you can wait 2 years, maybe you can get yourself a Manning. But Shedeur, I mean, how can you not be impressed? Yards, touchdowns, no running game, 52 sacks. I think he has what it takes, but there will be a media circus that follows him.
Real quick, Sam.
Bill, like 30 seconds, but you mentioned the Arch Manning thing. Can you give us all an update on the Arch Manning situation? It seems like there's a lot of stuff around his name, but he may not even be starting this year. What's going on with Arch Manning?
Oh, he's not going to transfer. He's going to sit behind Quinn Ewers for another year, and by the time he's ready to play, it's going to be great. You saw signs of that in the spring game, and Quinn Ewers has gotten hurt the last 2 years, so we're going to see. I think we're going to see Arch play a little bit this year. And he'll really impress going into 2025.
Always appreciate it. Bill Bender does a terrific job, the sporting news on college football. Thank you, my friend. Be well. Enjoy the draft.
Hey, no problem. Thanks for having me.
Odds and ends are right around the corner. We wrap up the show next. Just about time to wrap things up on this Wednesday edition of the show. And don't forget, you can get us whenever you want us. It's called the Sports Wrap with Jason Page podcast vodcast. There for you every afternoon. Maybe we're not on every day on television in your particular market. Maybe we're only on the weekends. Maybe we're only on the weekdays. Whatever it may be, just take all the fuss out of it. And just go and subscribe to the vodcast available on Spotify, Google Play, Apple Podcasts, TuneIn, iHeartRadio, you name it. We are on all of them. All right, time for some odds and ends. Odds and ends, Sam Yarnell. The end of the life for a baseball that Shohei Ohtani hit on Tuesday night, Mike. God, almost 119 miles an hour, 2 miles an hour faster than any ball hit this year, 450 feet against your Washington Nationals. What do you have to say for yourself that your team gave up the longest and hardest hit ball of the season?
I was watching it live.
Awesome.
I've seen a lot of home runs in that ballpark, quite a few. I've seen a lot of home runs by the opposing team in that ballpark, having been a Nationals fan since the jump in 2005, and especially since that ballpark's inauguration in 2008. That ball was annihilated in a way that you don't see. It was reminiscent of the home run derby in 2018. it was Adam Dunn type of power. It was peak Bryce Harper MVP 2015 season type of power off the bat of Shohei Ohtani last night, Jason. An impressive feat. But the Dodgers are not in a good spot. The Nationals should have won that game. The story of that game should have been the fact that Patrick Corbin pitched into the sixth inning without giving up an earned run against the Los Angeles Dodgers. You heard that right, folks. Patrick Corbin was into the sixth inning of this game and had not given up an earned run against the Los Angeles Dodgers. But then Matt Barnes comes in and throws 86 over the heart of the plate, and Shohei Ohtani takes him 450 to straightaway right field. I mean, as much potential as that team has, I can't do it, Jason. Today's not my day.
Here's what's crazy. Ohtani's off to this fantastic start, given everything that's transpired around him this year, which obviously has not affected him on the field. He's fourth right now when it comes to MVP voting, MVP odds in the National League, according to FanDuel. Mookie Betts at 250 right now. Ronald Acuna Jr., 650. Fernando Tatis Jr. at 800. And then there's Ohtani at 1,000. I mean, sprinkle, sprinkle? Do I hear sprinkle, sprinkle?
I really think that the MVP of this league is going to come from none of the guys that you just mentioned this year. But one of the impressive things, Jason, is
your buddy Bryce Harper?
Ellie De La Cruz at 24-1 is speaking the most to me right now. I mean, that kid is lighting the world on fire. But one thing that you mentioned just threw me for a loop there. Ronald Acuna Jr. at plus 650. This is a guy who was plus 190 thereabout preseason to win this award. I mean, the fall for him this season off of a historic season, so obviously it's hard to go up from there. But the fall has been tremendous for Ronald Acuna Jr.
I don't disagree.
It's been horrible this season.
I don't disagree. We only got a couple minutes. Give me some other markets you like here on baseball.
But listen, I this is why the people got to listen to us, Jason, because we are here to provide the people with winners. And so far, you're looking at CLV nearly across the board on our preseason baseball bets. We've already cashed with the Chicago White Sox under 12 and a half wins before May 1st.
Cha-ching.
Just so everybody out there has a little extra bankroll in their bank account heading into this next month. But hey, Tarik Skubal, who we gave out at 10-1 preseason to be the AL Cy Young, he's down to 5-1. And I'm telling you, get in while you still can. That's still a good price on Tarik Skubal. The kid is pitching out of his mind, and that Detroit team is playing better than everyone expected. There's a lot of script writing in my mind going on for Tarik Skubal to be your AL Cy Young. And also the favorite in that market, if you'll remember coming into the season, it was Corbin Burnes, and he was plus 250, plus 280, depending on your house. He's plus 460 now.
Didn't you like Bobby Witt Jr. too for AL MVP for a sprinkle sprinkle? And right now he's up to 450, second best odds, right behind Juan Soto. Every time I say his name, I gotta say it that way. Plus 250 for Juan Soto. And how about Mike Trout at 650, which is a bit of a surprise, you know, given his injury problems and all that. And I still would be terrified to put any sort of good money on him for that reason.
So that's and I've thought about that Trout number a lot. That is exactly why the book is hanging it where they are, because of his injury history. They know that that price is really good, and with the way Mike Trout has been playing, makes any better want to run to the window with it. And they know they can hang just about any number because it's almost never going to turn into a liability with Mike Trout. The odds of this guy playing the whole season in the American League are incredibly slim, because if he is healthy by the trade deadline, I would bet you that he gets dealt to
traded. He's not getting traded. They're not trading him, especially if that division remains as crappy as it is right now. They're going to be in the mix, and they're going to want to try and make a run at a postseason with him.
Moreno made the mistake once of not selling a superstar, and he's paying for it already. He's not going to make the mistake twice, which would really be the sixth time.
We'll see what happens. By the way, Greg Norman says LIV Golf open to the idea of going to 72 holes. It's going to wrap it up for us today. Thank you to Bill Bender. Thank you to Ross Tucker. Thanks to you, Sam Yarnell. I'm Jason Page. We'll see you back here on Thursday for more Sports Wrap.